people miss you, man. The people miss you. We're obviously still doing numbers. People love the collector series. They like the surprise with Shyway Vlogs, you know, but they miss you. And you're on vacation. You did this spontaneously. And you keep hitting me up. One, you keep saying, Andrew, I miss you. I want to talk to you.
I do. I miss you, dude.
You're like, I want to do an episode. But the whole point of going on vacation was to take your mind away from cards and economics, the hobby, America, all that stuff. So what's the deal? Why are you giving us mixed signals?
Well, I mean, listen, the point of vacation is go away from my job, right? So you take a little bit of a, you know, a reset button. But this, I don't consider this work. You know that. I consider this fun. It's the hobby. You know, a hobby is an escape. I don't need an escape from my escape. I miss my escape. I love the hobby, man. I was last night, everyone's asleep. I'm making stupid videos. See, Blaz, I love you. It just, it's easy. Every time I see someone dancing now, I make a C Bless video. Guys, if you haven't seen it, go ahead and take a look at my stupid page.
That's how slim pickings it is with the hobby. It's C Bless or nothing anymore.
It's C Bless or nothing. No, Shayway Vlogs.
Tied up in litigation, so they can't be posting as actively.
I mean, I don't know if you saw it, but if you want to talk about litigation, like Dapper Labs had a bad decision come down today too on the Top Shot stuff. And that's it's more NFT things. I don't want to. I don't, yeah, that they quote, yeah, they said it's like a security. I mean, they didn't say it's a security. This is a procedural thing that basically they made a motion to say the court needs to find that it's not a security. And the court said, we're not going to find that there are factual issues. They didn't say that it was a security. It's just a procedural, you know, motion practice. But it's interesting stuff.
Well, a few things. I can give context why NFTs matter, but people who listen to us already understand. But why is that a bad decision? Because why is that a bad decision for Dapper Labs? I don't get it.
Well, I don't believe that NFTs are securities per se. But if they're securities, they're regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Okay.
And it becomes a regulated, you know, thing. And then it's like, you know, it's a coin and it's, I mean, basically it becomes sort of like a stock. It becomes sort of like, you know, the rules governing it, and you're buying something that is a proxy for the company. Can you see that in the background? Can you see the cruise ship leaving there? That's pretty cool, ship, right?
People are yelling.
Yeah, they're yelling on the cruise ship. That's pretty cool. It's Departed.
Oh!
Yeah, hey!
Have you guys ever seen the movie Deja Vu? One of my favorite movies with Denzel Washington. And he can like kind of go back in time.
Yep.
And he's on a
cruise ship. Ava Mendez, right?
No. Nice tribe, very similar but different. I see what you're saying.
He goes back in time. Oh no, yeah, he goes back in time.
Ava Mendez doesn't have the acting capability.
There was one where he was like a police officer. Same kind of thing.
Yeah. Right. Ava Mendez is Training Day, brother.
No.
But dude, yes, 100%. Come on, dude. We were gonna do movie trivia, you think you're gonna beat me? We've done 900 episodes, you don't know anything about movies. You read books. I think you're reading Mary Poppins.
On vacation, I read books.
100%. NFTs, I mean, NBA Top Shot isn't securities. So that makes sense. It's more of a reward program where if you own this NFT, you can get through the Mavs game. You know, you can get a picture with Luka. You can get an autographed photo of Kevin Garnett. Yeah. That's a good thing, I think.
Yeah. By the way, Out of Time, the name of the movie.
So I have five topics.
Five.
Jake Paul versus Tommy Fury.
Okay, that's a good All-Star. One.
So they're fighting this weekend. That's why I'm talking about it. I have my thoughts. You're going to have yours. The All-Star game was terrible by all accounts. Record low views. My question to you is, who's a bigger draw, Curry or LeBron? I watched hockey. Amazing sport. Just amazing. It's so much fun. We can talk
You're
about
such a
hockey.
Liar. You can't even say it convincingly.
That sounded sarcastic?
No, because you watch hockey the other day and you were like, why? Why do people watch this?
Dude, the Blackhawks went into overtime versus Vegas, and with 1 second left, Patrick Kane got a breakaway, slap shot, goal. The puck crossed the line 0.01 seconds after time expired, so they called it back. But it was amazing. I'm dead serious.
Hold your other two topics, and let's just run with hockey, right? Because it's not my sport, but it doesn't surprise me that you enjoy it because it is very similar to soccer.
Yeah,
you know, it is a similar setup. And I was just going to say, indoor, which I played myself, not like you. You're a professional athlete. But I did play at some point in time. I was a goalie, which I love playing indoor soccer because it was just a jumbo tennis ball and a very small net. And I was like the sumo wrestler in the goal. No one could score on me. It was amazing. I went all over the place. I traveled all up the Eastern Seaboard playing travel soccer indoor when the weather was not so great here in the Northeast. But yeah, man, I mean, it doesn't surprise me because it's setting up the play. It's patience. It's the defense moving up and a lot of passes and a lot of lower scoring.
It's ultimate teamwork. You only play 20 minutes a game. So I have a take.
Oh, shoot.
The Edmonton Oilers and Connor McDavid is the Trae Young of the NHL.
Okay.
Empty stats, a lot of promise. And so here's a fun fact. Mm-hmm. You'll give me your take. Edmonton has four guys in the top 25 statistical categories. Okay. Points, goals, assists. Four guys.
Yep.
We love stats out there, right? Rebounds, assists, goals. Four guys. They're in sixth. They were going on seventh place in the West. Okay?
Okay.
Boston has one guy in all of those categories. They're far and away the best team in the league.
I mean, the teamwork matters, right? The teamwork matters. It gets interesting, you know, when it gets into the playoffs. That's why you picked the Avs last year to win it all. It's defense, goalkeeping, better team play. You can't really name a player on the team, but you went straight with Colorado because they are, you know, they are a pretty impressive team. I don't know if I'd go Trae Young. He's been doing it a little longer than Trae Young. And, you know, you're right. I mean, there's only so much some, you know, individual could do. They have a lot of, you know, people on that team that are good. But, you know, they'll put it together, I think. Unlike the Hawks. Although the Hawks, listen, they had some playoff success. You know, they go to Eastern Conference.
They had one run and 4 years.
Trae's only played 4 years, you know? I mean, like, they only played 5 years, right?
4 years.
So, I mean, listen, the hockey stuff, why I will pivot now for hockey with you is I would love it if you started buying hockey cards, not just Kane because he had a great game. But there are amazing vintage hockey cards, amazing hockey cards of, you know, like recent stuff that just
don't sell. I'd rather just buy hockey jerseys, cheaper, and I could actually use them. And they're sick. The Blackhawks jerseys are super sick. Maple Leaf jerseys are super sick. Yeah. And Edmonton jerseys are super sick. Super sick.
There you go. I mean, so why Edmonton buy a Gretzky jersey? You know?
My final topic, if you're interested, since you're in vacation mode, you're in Bob Marley mode right now. Did you go to town and pick up a little bit of the ganja?
I smoked 3 cigars yesterday, and I smoked 2 cigars so far today. I'll probably have another one later.
He's so reclined. My last one, what I've been doing this week, guys, is, and I did this exercise with my family. I said, draw on a piece of paper, a circle, and forget the bills, forget money that's out the door. Your investment portfolio. Draw percentages where that money is. So that's what I've been doing this week, sort of just thinking about my investment portfolio for the next year, right? Like, we get sometimes
for diversification purposes, for like making sure you know where all your stuff is.
So before we even go there, just the exercise gives you a bird's eye view of where your money is. It lets you detach from the day-to-day of price movements, whether that's in stocks, in crypto, in cards, right? We get caught up in, oh, this is up, you know, this much, or this is down this much. More of a bird's eye view of where is my money? And then separately, what is my thesis? Like, what do I actually just think is going to happen? You know, do I think we have a bullish outlook? Do I think the economy is doing well, we're hiring, we're producing a lot of stuff, we have a president, we can believe it, the world is safe and we have a lot of good things happening, or do we think that there's a lot of headwinds, you know, there's potentially war and crises all over, you know, inflation's high, money's tightening up, people have credit card debt. What is my thesis? What do I think is going to happen? Because a lot of your decisions on investing, like buying cards, buying stocks, buying crypto, buying NFTs, whatever you buy, depends on your overall thesis. So
I like the simplicity of what you're doing, because not only does it get you to focus your brain on, you know, is your money in the right spot, but more importantly, a lot of people are moving. Sure, they're like
Tropic Thunder. And I identified with Simple Jack. So you with
I'm not saying that the simplicity of it is a good thing, dude. Just stick with me for a second. It's not. I'm actually gonna give you a compliment on this. I'm not trying to be a hard time. People listening, if they're like me, finances sometimes I'll compare it to a junk drawer. You know what I mean? Like you know that drawer you have in the cabinet in your kitchen, and it's like just everything goes in there. You don't know what's in there. The tape, the glue stick. You never know if you're going to need it. You know, the crazy glue's there in case the Christmas ornaments break. It's just that's that drawer. that's a lot of people's finances because they move job to job. They got 401ks they didn't roll over. They got this money here. They got some money in crypto maybe. They got some money in a bank. This is in a checking account. This is in this one. And, I mean, if you're anything like me, I know I opened up some bank accounts for my kids a couple years ago that are basically just like checking accounts. And at the time, I opened them up because the interest rates were zero and I was getting like 0.02%. And it made sense because that's what the rates were. And I just left it there. And now you can get 5% on a CD. You know what I mean? And it's just in the junk drawer. What you're saying is, you know, take stock in it. You know, figure it out. Do a little kind of diagnostic, if you will, on it, right? And see whether or not.
I think you always do the diagnostics. This is why this topic, you know, it's, you know, things that are second nature to us, we don't even realize. Versus, like, I would argue, my family is always like the junk drawer. And that's why there's always stress and anxiety at the end of months of how to pay bills or, you know, just not knowing where money is. It becomes stressful, you know. Money is a tool that you should use versus it being a tool that uses you. So that's that. Anything that you've been thinking about this week?
Pivot that into cards. Because, I mean, a couple of things. Number one, macroeconomics aside, and we'll talk about that in a second, right? Because it dovetails with it. Just the hobby in general in the last couple of years, it's smart to do that, your overall finances, but then do a second page with just your collection, right? I mean, we talked about different years of doing this podcast, the different times in the hobby. We've talked about different ways of doing it. There was the, you know, go after your base cards. Then there was like, go after your refractors and your numbered cards. Then there was color up, you know what I mean? Sell all your base and your number and try to get something that was, you know, a big card, the whole deal. I don't know what this year is on your cards, but you probably, if you're like me, you have cards everywhere. There are cards in this vault, you got cards in that vault. It's like a 401k at your old job and a 401k at this job. You got cards in your basement. You got cards at PSA. You got cards at Beckett. You got cards, you know, with a consignor, whatever it is. Take stock what you have. And then also, I guess, think about, is what I have out there what I want to have? Is there someplace better I can be moving this? And then layer in, let's talk about the macroeconomics, which now puts your conversation about your overall finances with your cards. I know the cards are just one segment of it, but it makes sense, right? You got to think about what's going on or what you think is going to go on with the world and how that may impact what your holdings are, right?
Two questions. Well, one statement, one question. I timed doing the investment overlook or portfolio overlook as I was liquidating, right? So I was like, which cards do I want to hold? Which ones do I want to liquidate? I trimmed the fat, as we always talk about. Mm-hmm. And I did the portfolio kind of performance outlook then. But my question is, let's say you have cards right now. If it's 6 months, they're 50% down. Would you be okay with that? The cards you have everywhere.
It's a great question. I mean, I would hope that most people listening to this would say no, because everyone's miserable. That's 50%. No way.
Some people don't want to sell their cards. Some people love that stuff and they don't need the money. But if you might need the money in September, October, and you have so I'll go on the record. I think that we haven't even sniffed the bottom. So I'll give you guys some numbers. So last year, S&P was down between like 15 and 20%. This year, it's like the head fake that Cage talks about is back up 5%. If you just look at the charts from the last like 13 years, we ran straight up. We haven't even come down close. I think S&P and all these markets are going to come down another 30, 40%. That might scare some people, but the reality is we shot to the moon and we have not come down to earth. We're still like in the clouds somewhere. So that's my macro outlook. And if I need cards, if I need money in October, September of this year, I want to go to Nashville. I want to travel.
Yeah.
Where am I going to get that money? And I sure as hell am going to be pissed if I have cards right now that I could probably get back, but I'm holding them for whatever reason because I'm lazy to do like look at my portfolio and I should just sell this and buy it back if I want it at a later date. Or this one,
especially if your bet is that it's going to be. So what's funny about this? It's a useful exercise for a bunch of reasons, and I'm glad, you know, you never know where an episode's going to go. I'm glad it's going to go here, because if you did that, if you did like your pro and con list, you know what I mean, like you do when you take a new job or whatever it is, you're going to have the 50 cards you own, the 100 cards you own, and you're going to make a list. But it's not going to be a pro and con list. It's going to be a list of how easy is it going to be for me to get this card back, even if it's slightly more money and, you know, whatever it is. And then how difficult is it going to be for me to get this card back? And maybe if you want to put a little asterisk on some of these, it's, do I really want to part with this card? Because to me, that's a fun one, right? When you start asking, you know, which of these cards I don't want to part with, chances are those are the cards that are probably not going to drop 50%, right? Because if it's a card you don't want to part with, I'll bet you there's somebody else out there that also doesn't want to part with it. And if you have that tranche of cards, right, those ones that's like, yeah, that was a pain in the ass for me to get, or hey, I haven't seen one of these for a long time, or hey, it just holds a special, you know, place for me. That last part, hopefully there's other people who that, you know, it's not like, you know, a mass-produced card. You're like, I love this card. It holds a special place for me because I met the player. You know what I mean? Like, take that one out of the equation. What we're looking for are things that are going to draw someone else to it, draw the masses to it. Now, I'm not saying sell anything, guys. I mean, for a lot of people listening, this is a hobby. They bought the cards not even caring about going up, going down, you name it. They want to own the cards. They want to just own the cards they have, and they've curated their own collection. But for those of you out there, probably a lot of you, who are listening to us and have that two hats, the Bleeker hat and the Luka Tiger hat, right? The investor hat and the collector hat. For those of you guys who are doing it both, right? That investor side, it always makes sense to kind of take stock in what you have and say, all right, is this something I need to own? Is this something I want to continue to own? Is it something I think I can buy back? How easy is it going to be for me to buy this individual card back?
So you went collector investor.
Yeah.
Now, so we always do this. We love two options as humans, LeBron or Curry, Jordan.
I think most people listening are both.
But we never – I like this exercise of like a pufferfish, okay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay? And think about – we think about our collections, yeah. But we don't think about how much – like this exercise of what percentage of my disposable income is in my collection?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what percent – and I'm not saying like – let's say when things were going really good and it was a bull market, you wanted to put more chips on the table, right?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
100%.
It's not just take your chips off the table and cash out. Sometimes you could just take your chips off the table and sit on the sidelines and watch the market too. And like that blowfish, if 80, 90% of your money is in cards, maybe it's time to have 50% of your money in cards and 50 in cash, because there's so many headwinds that I believe economically that I might be able to buy things better and cheaper and cooler cards if I have that cash position. I can't buy if I don't have the cash position.
Yeah, I get it. I think you're 100% right. I think, I mean, I like it. I do it pretty often with my collection. I'm, you know, consistently going through the cards that I own and saying, all right, is this something that is a long-term hold for me? Is it something I need to sell? Is it something, well, need to sell? And then if I hang on to it, I always ask that other little B question of if I need to liquidate this, is it something that's going to maintain some value now, right? Because that's the other thing, right? Like if you're right, and I'm not as doom and gloom as you are on the overall economy. I like to think that when everybody's predicting a drop like that, that usually the head fake kind of turns us all around. And if everyone I talk to wants to short the market, wants to say, all right, I think it's going to go down. I know a lot of people are putting a lot of money into shorting the market. And normally when that happens, when the public says that, it doesn't go that way, right? That's usually, I could be very wrong here, but just stick with me. Assuming you're right, and you have to kind of assume there is this worst case scenario of doom and gloom, right? Should I sell this card now? Or is it something that I think will hold up for whatever reason? I keep a lot of vintage cards. I'll just throw it right at you, a lot of vintage cards. Because the vintage cards didn't run as crazy. They didn't come crashing down as crazy. And I know a lot of people out there who, because they've done the exercise you're doing, they've been in this hobby for a long time, every year they dedicate a set amount of money, a set amount of disposable income to their cards, and they buy their vintage cards. It's not somebody who's overweight in cards, as they say, right? Pufferfish, your example. The modern stuff, the people who are out there, you know, no shitting on you guys. I love every one of you. But people who are out there hustling, you know, buying a card at the Dallas show at one table and running to the other corner and selling it for more money, or attempting to do that, or buying it at Dallas because they're going to sell it the week after at some other show. Those cards, those people, they probably haven't been doing this for as long and don't have a system. Every vintage lunatic I talk to, they have, all right, you know what? When I get paid, I know how much I make this year. I cap it at 10%. And if I need to go more than 10% of my disposable income, yeah. Yeah,
man. I'm that disciplined, the people that you know.
I do know several people, and what they say is sometimes I have to go outside that 10%, but if I do, I'll sell something else from my
you PC. You have way more financially responsible friends than I do.
These are the lunatics that buy vintage baseball.
And I want to be clear, because so doom and gloom, we use that term.
Yep.
What I said is come up with a thesis. I didn't say put your bets on the table. So it's a difference between saying, I believe 6 months or a year from now that there's a lot of things that this economy is facing on a global scale and from just a local scale micro as well. I would feel more comfortable having more cash versus I'm going to short the market. Those are two different things. I'm going to feel a little bit more safe versus I'm actively betting against the market. Those are two different things.
Very.
And I think that's important to understand.
And there's nothing wrong with placing a small piece on that. Because
I have two Mahomes and TRPAs. Maybe I sell one and hold cash on the other. That doesn't mean I believe in Mahomes less. What I'm saying is there's just a little bit more uncertainty. Maybe I know myself and I'll sleep better at night knowing I have that safety blanket.
I mean, I see no lies. I see nothing wrong here. I mean, I could hear, you know, folks listening to this who have been a hobby for a long time collecting saying, if you're that over leveraged right now, you shouldn't be here to begin with. And you know what? You might be right. But unfortunately, the people
You need to share a room at a show with anybody else, you should not be in this hobby. Find a different hobby.
But the point is, there are people listening who are
actually, in that. Yeah, I understand the premise.
Whatever reason they're in this, they're in it. You know what I mean? And the funny part is, I think we like to talk to the people who are in these predicaments, not say, well, screw you, you got yourself into this mess. You should never have been here to begin with. Well, guess what? There are people listening who are here. And this stuff that you're talking about here, you know, doing a diagnostic, going through it, writing it out, actually making a checklist, doing that whole like health checkup for yourself, your PC, your overall financial well-being is a good thing.
Well, like you got yourself into this mess. Let's use that premise. Yeah. You're only a certain amount of moves, right moves away from getting yourself out of the mess. And you're only a certain amount of right moves of thriving, right? So back to the episode where Cage talked about it usually on your third cycle is when you win. Well, getting to your third cycle, learning all of that stuff, like even if you've messed up, what's amazing about this country and capitalism and all the opportunity here is even if you are in a mess, you could get yourself out by literally making the next right decision.
Yep. Yeah. And sometimes the right decision, believe it or not, is taking a small loss right now. Sometimes it is. One of our most listened to episodes is selling for a loss, why it's okay. You know what I mean? And we talked about that early 2022, and a lot of people listened and message us and say, thanks for the episode, because they sold, you know, and then watched a lot of things that they own, you know, go down, and they bought back in some of them at lesser price. I mean, so listen, to those of you out there that have just been in the hobby for a long ass time and you got your PC and you spend your money and you're just having fun, great. I apologize for wasting your last 13 minutes. But there's a lot of people out there who are not as disciplined. And I think what Andrew's trying to do is maybe get them there. Maybe get them the discipline. Maybe this is their first time around, maybe it's their first time doing this. And know you're not alone doing it. Even Andrew's with you.
Cage has this like it's like the water underneath like the tide. He just doesn't want to alienate our audience.
No.
He doesn't want to doom and gloom them. Even in the beginning, you could look back. He's like, NFTs, but I don't know if we should go there. Like these people that listen, they can't handle a little bit of, they'll be fine, Cage. I promise.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I love them all. It's getting dark here. It's pretty crazy. But let's see if we catch up. The sunset. I would get a computer to some. Sunset.
Cage on vacation is like a lost duck. He doesn't know.
Look, I got no real color yet either. I've been really putting the sunscreen.
You've been ordering.
I put the
what do they have? Tomato, right in the Uber, in Aruba.
I wish they have Uber Eats here. No way. I go out. I get to put this. You know, it's dark.
Is it all inclusive?
I do not do all inclusive. I don't drink enough to make that worth it anywhere. So, you know, they have it here, but. We don't do that.
All inclusive is about convenience. It's not about like you don't have to get your dollars worth.
So this,
if you go all you could eat, do you like food coma yourself too?
No, I mean, I probably would try to eat more than I need to eat, but this place that I'm at right now, there's nothing more convenient than what we have. There's a million restaurants, like within, I could throw a baseball and hit probably 50 restaurants, bars, there's a movie theater, there's all kinds. It's like, it's really nice. I'm having a great time, a little last minute trip. Thanks, Andrew, holding down the fort. I appreciate it. And I missed you guys.
It's not just Andrew, it's the team. We have Shane, we have Will, we have Alex, they hold it down.
Yeah,
it's like an assembly line. They all know what
TPZ doing his episodes. Shy Wave Vlogs showing up and posting a bunch of stories. I like that guy. You know, the hobby's better with him in it. I said in my story, and no one really agreed with me. So I'm fighting a bunch of people when I get back. Listen, man, I'm excited for a lot of stuff. Our partnership with Beckett is awesome. A couple of people have messaged me and Andrew, looking to submit tickets, looking to submit cards, and asking if there's a discount code. I don't know that we have one yet. But we will get you one. I know you're working on that, right?
Tickets is a bit more manual because it's a newer process. The other stuff, you could actually use code Luca Nation, and it should work for everything other than bulk collectors. Luca Nation.
So you got a little code there. Beckett stuff.
People love the code.
Luca Nation. The code is.
You didn't have fun with it. Any of your thoughts on Jake Paul versus Tommy Fury? Because I have some really strong opinions on this.
I mean, I think you think Jake Paul's going to kill him. The cool part about it is what started is almost kind of like a joke, right? I mean, it's like, oh, let me make some money. I'll train. I'll become a boxer. You know, sort of a joke. Whatever you think about the Paul brothers and, you know, what they've done, they don't half-ass it. I mean, unless they're buying Pokemon cards and then they half-ass it and get, you know, G.I. Joe.
Well, just talk about Jake. You don't have to group them. We do this.
But I can group them because a lot of people thought it was
Yeah, but then they group you and I, but you and I are individuals. We're different.
Well, you're WWE and I'm boxing, or vice versa. Even though I'm grouping them,
what you're definitely WWE.
What I'm
going to
say here is the difference.
I got out of here with that shit.
You know, Logan Paul he went into wrestling and he's good. Like, he's really good. Like, you'd figure with his name, he could half ass it and not be. But he's very, very good. He does the moves, he's decent on the mic. I mean, like, he is a legit. And Jake Paul, I'm pretty sure the WBC came out and said that they would rank him. Like a legit ranked fighter after this fight, which is, you know, which is pretty impressive. I will say he has, I mean, there's a bunch of tomatoes that he's fought. He's fought a bunch of cans, they call it, right? He's fought a bunch of, it's hand-picked, like Mick did for Rocky before Club of Lang. Hand-picked, right? They were guys that met his style. They were guys that were not going to give him a tough time. They were guys that were, you know, easily hand-picked, selected. I mean, when you fight Tyron Woodley, that's not a fighter. I mean, that's a wrestler. That's somebody who's not a boxer.
Ben Askren.
You fight Ben Askren. It's Askren. Ben Askren. He needed an aspirin after the fight. I mean, that is a world-class wrestling grappler. You know, I mean, the people he's fought really are not boxers, right? So, you know, you give it kind of a – he's look legit. We'll see what happens. I know you think he's just going to kick the shit out of him. So go ahead. Say your piece.
So I was listening to a soccer match. It was Champions League all yesterday and today. I think you guys listening would agree. I think I'm more of a play-by-play guy. Cage is the color commentary. I think what I try to do in this business is separate, like, noise from reality, right? Like, what is being said out there on the line versus just, like, what's happening? And I think the better you could do that and draw your own conclusions, the more successful you'll be. So neither of them have fought anybody, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay. True. Cool. But then you watch how they fight. So I had to look this up. Like, if you watch Tommy Fury fight, he kind of looks like he's a heavyweight now.
He fights bigger, yes.
He fights bigger. Do you know he's 6 foot 180? That's small boy. So if you're – that's not too big, right?
Guy, no, I mean,
6'1", 180.
Yeah, 6'1", 180, yeah.
You watch him fight, and he fights like a big boy, but he kind of hits soft. And then Jake, he hasn't fought anybody. But, dude, you're 100% right. Like, forget the whole Disney Channel influencer, all of these labels. You got to admit, the guy has been training. And every fight, he's gotten better. And I think here's the big thing. When you box, you realize, is where do you punch from? Do you punch from your hands, your shoulders? Or do you punch with your core and your whole body and your hips? You've said this before.
Yeah, yep.
Who actually punches and hits like a boxer?
I mean, I think Fury was a boxer. I know he was like
No, I didn't ask that. I said who hits like one.
I mean, Paul looks like a puncher. I want to say boxer. He looks like a puncher, right?
The other guy looks like, okay, good-looking chap, 6 foot. He's obviously the better-looking of the brothers, the Tyson brothers. He's not a boxer. He's not a fighter. So that's where I go with it. It's not that Jake Paul is good. I just – the other guy is pretty piss poor.
I mean, listen, his brother's obviously a great boxer. Yeah. He was on the undercard of the Woodley thing, right? I mean, he was on that. He fought on that. Not that that's, you know, the Jake Paul versus Woodley thing. Not that that's anything great. But, you know, I mean, they were supposed to fight, I think, 2021.
Yeah, he bailed.
He said he had a broken rib. I mean, if that's legit, you can't fight with a broken rib.
But so, it doesn't matter. All that stuff, that's separating the noise from the reality. One guy hits hard. One guy's been improving. One guy's fit. One guy, this is his thing, Jake. And there's another guy. He's a pretty boy, comes from a boxing family, but he's clearly not the boxer in the family.
Yeah, his brother's clearly the boxer. But, no, I mean, listen, it should be interesting, right? Because, look, this guy's got some boxing experience, not spectacular boxing experience. He's like 4-0. But, you know, it's still two reality dum-dums fighting each other. You know what I mean? It's not.
You think Jake Paul's a reality dum-dum? Do you know what the odds are on this?
No.
Jake Paul -180. Tommy Fury +150.
So you're expecting him to win, and you know so are the bookmakers. You know,
I would if I was the book, I would put it -300 on Jake.
All right, so you're getting good money. That's it. Forget about shorting the market. Just put all your money on Jake Paul. Let's go. Forget about the circles. Forget about the list. Forget about
this
the
guy. Comes in with no topics. Cigars to the dome. High as a kite.
Yeah, that's me. You got me. People love that episode, man.
So if you don't want to talk about hockey because you know nothing about it, you don't want to talk about Jake Paul.
I can definitely talk about hockey.
What do you want to cut your teeth on?
Well, I do miss the hobby. Top series 1 2023 came out. Nice little trade night at Bleecker last night. Looked like people were having a good time over there. Looked like Alex Drymo was having too much of a good time, actually, if you look at her stories. But, you know, I mean, listen, it's fun. I'm away from it, but I still get connected to it here on Instagram. I'm excited. I saw the Philly show ended at the Slam Dunk Champion. Mr. Mack, which should be fun, you know, because even though he's not exactly a real basketball player and hasn't actually seen an NBA court,
he's good.
He played at Georgetown. I said to Ian, hey, who won the slam dunk contest? He's like, God, McClunk, oh, yeah. And I'm like, you want to go see him in Philly? He's like, yeah. Like, that was, that's the more exciting thing, you know? So, you know, that was fun. The All Star game. We can definitely talk about the All Star game, 100%. Because I did watch some of it. Ian watched the whole thing. And it was kind of silly, if I'm allowed to give kind of, you know, my topic on it. It's become a little more pointless. I don't know whether people enjoyed it. I don't know if people, you know, really like it. I saw a lot of Twitter and Instagram posts saying, stupid, why even have it? What was your thoughts? You did, this was one of your topics. I'm stealing one of your five topics, but I did watch the game. And
Remember The Last Dance where at the Space Jam, they set up the bubble and they had these legendary pickup games.
Yes.
So this is after Michael Jordan was filming a movie in the off season, right? Yeah. After like 6, 7, 8 hours of filming, he would go and play these games. Did you ever hear a single story of someone getting hurt from those pickup games?
No. No. And nobody really got hurt in the 92 Olympic team, you know, the Dream Team stuff that I know of. So
this whole injury illusion is bullshit because injuries are part of the game. I would argue you could get injured running up the court like that easily, if not easier than playing full contact, because you're still part of the game. There's still opportunity to get injured and you're not really playing 100%, but you're not like really dogging it. So I would argue that you're still susceptible to injury. It's stupid. Just play. Just compete. You don't have to injure someone. There's a difference between competing and trying to injure someone. Like you don't have to clothesline them. You don't have to go up and under them when they're.
You don't have to Jokic to the, what do you call them, the Markieff brothers?
Yeah, to the Markieff brothers. You don't have to close out underneath them when they shoot. but you could still play tough defense. Like you, I don't know. It's not that the fix is not that complicated to me.
All right, so it's just a lack make of desire. Play.
Well, it's a lack of desire, and I don't, dude. You know this. You've hired people. You've fired people. You've had people work for you. How do you change desire? Hey, that's the hardest thing to
change. So there's my question for you. If you and expand it to the slam dunk competition too, if you offered up a couple $1 million to the winner, if you offered up to the you know the All-Star game, you know win shares, you know real money. I know for some of these guys, a couple $1 million isn't going to matter. But for many of them, it does. I mean, Pete Alonso was a good example of, you know, look, I think he gave the money to charity, but he won more in a home run derby than he was being paid the season he won it. You know what I mean? And that, it's obviously a big deal, right? Maybe you get some of the younger guys actually playing and trying to win, you know? You know, people
I have a different way to do it.
Shoot.
I would do the also, I would do the, like, season starts when? December, October 15th, October 20th?
Yep.
Okay. So I would do the All-Star game 2 months ago. I would pair it with the Christmas games. Then okay. I would give – that would be my All-Star break, and then I would give them a second break right around this time of 4 or 5 days where they could just go on vacation or chill or like a spring break, a little shorter break, okay. right before the stretch of the 30 games and the playoffs. And I would move the All-Star break before the new year, 2 months in. It will be some of the young guys – who are playing the best. It would just be the best players who want to play in a pickup game and put on a show.
I like it. You don't think you need to pay them. I think you pay them. People actually play. I do. And it becomes interesting. But
aren't they getting the paid now?
Yeah, but like a tiny amount. I don't think there's any big money on the line. You know, I mean, I know that.
Like, yeah, but what are you going to offer them? Like $1 million each player? No way. And anything like, what are you going to say? Like $100,000 for you to play? I make $35 million.
Why not?
Yeah, but I make $35 million. This doesn't matter to me.
For some of them, for some guys, it's going to matter, right? And maybe for some of the younger guys, you know, it'll matter for some of the older guys to come and win for some of the younger guys who the money matters for. Maybe it actually becomes something. And don't tell me like $1 million a person. I know it's a lot of money, but you know they're making that. You know what I mean? Otherwise, why do it? You know, why have it at all? Why have the spectacle of it? Right, you know they're advertising the hell out of it. You know they have sponsors. You don't think that somebody, you know, some company would put up the money to sponsor, actually pay the players. They put it on their jersey, whatever it is. I'm sure it'd be easy.
They get paid millions anyway.
I get it, but not all of them. Not all of them.
I would do 15. I would do 15 man rosters. I would do it before the new year. I would let the veterans opt out of playing. They could still make the All-Star game and be a part of it. But if you don't want to play, you could just opt out. I'd field the people that want to have something to prove. And you could add in, although I think this is stupid, whichever team wins, East or West Coast, or Eastern Conference or Western Conference gets the home court advantage. I don't like that. I think regular season, you should have to earn your home court advantage.
Listen, I think you want a hot take on it. I think we may be entering a realm where players make so much money that all-star games have become irrelevant. Because the people who are your stars, they're necessarily going to be the ones making so much money that, one, they don't want to get injured during, you know, the All-Star Fest. That doesn't matter for their actual records. It doesn't matter for, you know, whether they make the playoffs, whether they proceed and go forward. And you know, not only injured, but it doesn't fiscally impact them in any meaningful way that they come up with an injury, they fake, you know, take an injury, whatever the hell it is. And you see it in baseball, people sit out. I mean, not as many injuries in baseball. You see it in baseball. You see it in football, the All-Pro. You know, it's afterwards. Those guys go, but they, you know, they made it a flag football game. You know what I mean? That's pointless. It's silly. Younger guys come. When guys on their rookie contract, they're out there dancing, right? They, you know, they get a trip to Hawaii. But I think you're at a point where, I mean, when I watched the All-Star game in the 80s, the amount of money the guys were making mattered. You know what I mean? People played. People came and played, right? You know, it was a
well, Larry deal. Bird made $600K, and Magic Johnson was $600K. Was their salaries?
Can I steal something the Yankees do, and maybe this is something that would be cool, right? And maybe you get a way to do it. The Yankees every year have what's called an old timers game. Hmm. They bring in Yankees who are. You know, it used to be Yogi Berra was there. He didn't play, you know, but he did in the beginning. you know, you bring in some of the guys from the 90s, the 90s, the old, I can't believe Bernie Williams is an old timer, but, you know, Reggie Jackson is there. You know, you watch Reggie Jackson hit a home run, blah, blah, blah. It's just the Yankee thing. I'm sure other teams do it. But what if you had, like, one team of all-stars against the 90s greats? And one team.
Are you joking? That's how you get injured.
Yes, but the people getting injured would be, who cares if they got injured? Because they're not actually playing. Bring out Dirk, right? Bring out the guys who just retired. Jason Kidd, if you want. I mean, if you know, but yeah, bring out the people who just retired. Bring out, you know, who the hell cares? Bring out Jason Kidd, Dirk. Bring out Steve Francis. Find them. And you know what? Pay those guys.
Yes.
They're not making their money. You know what I mean? Like, bring those guys out and let them play.
Dominique.
You know, maybe they beat you. You know what I mean? Maybe the old guys, maybe Uncle Drew shows up and actually wins that game. You know what I mean? Who the hell? Dominique would be great. I mean, he's getting up there. But you know what I'm talking about. Like, bring in – find Jeremy Lin.
The gotcha.
Find
Aruba and Cage.
No. You know,
are
I don't
coming,
do that
are
shit.
You coming home?
I don't have a problem with anybody who does. There's plenty of it on the beach. But I don't do that shit. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. It was good stuff. But listen, this was a fun 40 minutes.
He's going to get that NFL drug test. He's like, Cage, please come to my office.
Yeah, maybe. Dude, this was never my thing. You know this. But this was fun, man. I might have to make you do it again tomorrow.
Sponsorship.
Yeah, take it. Boom. But we would get a sponsorship from somebody else if it was like, okay, Cage is finally like, – Andrew and Cage are going to be the same. Look, he's going to do a little bit of the wacky beatus. That's it. We're gonna do our stuff. But you gotta bring the ho-hos and the ding-dongs if that happens, you know?
So you haven't gotten any – I'm tanner than you.
No color. Zero. You're definitely tanner than me. I am wearing 100.
Out?
I do. Listen, so what's funny is it's winter. It's February. I'm very pale. I've got some pink. I'm trying to I've come here and I've gotten really burnt and the kids have gotten really burnt. He got his nose really burnt. His face gets burnt. So I'm trying to also like show them like don't get crazy, don't get burnt. And the first day I forgot about my little like line in my hair, and that got burnt to shreds. The little stripe in my head, I had to put sunblock on it and burnt like
the
crazy.
Key. I forgot to tell Cage you have to get a pre-tan. And if you can't go somewhere tropical, like you could go to a tanning bed. I actually have never done this because I have a darker complexion, but get a pre-tan so you don't burn.
Dude, I've been really good. I'm like as pale as I came down here. I mean, I got, you know, a little color on my like chest and stuff.
If you don't put suntan lotion on, you're going to burn. That's what you're saying.
I put on sunblock like crazy. But since my message to you, you hear that in the background?
Was this episode as good for you as it was for me?
I hope it's good for the folks. I missed you all. It might not have been the most educational episode. I love the economic stuff you came in with, man. It's really, really important for folks to you know, kind of do that diagnostic, and I'm loving that it's coming from you.
So you're somebody, we'll wrap up with this, Mr. Cage, because he listens to so many people. He's always on Instagram, reading Twitter. Well, look out for this guy.
Yeah,
So because a lot of people are in your ear shorting the market or thinking that we don't have a lot of sunny skies ahead, you actually think the opposite?
Well, I've usually try to fade the public, yes. I think that's a very good strategy usually. If everyone in the market thinks something's going to happen, the market usually doesn't work like that. It's sort of like, you know, football games. You know, how many times this year did we see 70, 75% of money on one side of a spread? And you're like, it never comes in.
Okay.
The public's on something and usually that doesn't happen.
Yes. In sports betting, fading the public is a profitable strategy. Economically speaking, do you see a lot of positive tailwinds in 2023?
It's the same thing though, dude. Like if everyone is saying, all right, you know what? It's time to get out of the market. It's time to short the market. It's if everyone's saying
that.
No, but I'm saying everyone's out there. The interest rates, the inflation, the whole deal, it's coming. I first heard it's coming in the first quarter of 2023. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. Now I'm hearing it's going to be next quarter. Then it's going to be the end of – I heard somebody talk about it's end of 2023, 2024. Get involved now. When that stuff happens, I just – you know, look, are there any reasons for it? Can I point to any great things that are happening in the economy that are like, wow, I can't wait for that? No. I know what you're saying. If we got an election coming next year that's on the horizon, you start to hear about that before you know it. There's so much stuff going on. But no, I have nothing to point to other than if everyone's on it, everyone's saying it's going to be bad, usually that's not the way it works.
It's not that everybody is saying something. These ambiguous everybodies who are out there. The Federal Reserve is raising rates and cutting money supply to combat inflation.
But that everyone knows that, right? I mean, that's very public. Yeah. Everyone knows that's out there, right?
Yeah. They're basically forcing us into a recession. That's basically out there. So are you saying that because all of that stuff is already out there and in the public, it's priced into markets?
Yeah.
And you, as an investor, you should be greedy because others are fearful thinking like that?
I mean, somebody said that. Somebody a lot smarter than me said it. So, yeah.
Okay.
But, I mean, does that mean go out and run and buy stocks right now? I'm not saying that. I don't know. I'm not a fortune teller. Could there be a period now of it going down more? Sure, 100%. I don't know what's going to happen. But I do know that you're right. There's a lot of fear. A lot of people saying we're going to be forced into a recession. Very well may happen. I think a lot of stocks have seen, you know, a little bit of a downturn because of that. I think a lot of it is already baked in. But who knows? That's just me. I try to be optimistic, man.
Cage's party is starting.
Yeah.
Bar number four flowing.
Tequila. Let's go. Cubans, man. Good Cubans here.
With nearly 40 years as the most trusted resource for collectors, dating back to the first Beckett magazine in 1984, Beckett has been the brand that bridges generations of the hobby. We're happy to be partnering with Beckett and look forward to keeping you all updated on the big things happening at the company in 2023. Beckett, it's the name you know and the name you can trust.